Welcome to Hail Varsity Radio, the voice of Husker Nation. Insight, opinion, expertise, with the biggest and best names talking Nebraska across the state. Join the show on Twitter at Hail Varsity and at Schmitz underscore radio. Call in at 402-466-ESPN or 1-800-825-5865. Here's Chris Schmitz.
Welcome to it. Wednesdays here. It's Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, Elijah Herbel, and you. We are going to make it through segment one without a coughing fit like yesterday for me. You've either started smoking Kools or Marlboro Reds. What's going on? I was gone Monday. You guys filled in. Appreciate you doing so, but you've either picked up smoking or you got some sort of gunk working.
Yeah, I got something going too. I'm not quite sure what it is. Maybe I picked it up from you. It's just gunk, and it's
kind of stay in separate rooms, and we nod and never make eye contact, so I didn't pass anything on to you.
Yeah, I don't know where it came from. None of my roommates are sick. None of my family is sick.
Well, the bottle I keep in my desk drawer is gone. And I know you're here later than I am doing SoundCloud and the social media postings. Hail Varsity on Twitter and ESPN Lincoln on Twitter. So I'm just saying.
I mean,
use a cup next time.
Well, there's been no typos, so I can't be taking that much from the bottle, right?
No, like. I know. Since you're underage, hey, we're loaded up, man. We've got a lot to talk about. You've got an official announcement with Nebraska football for their special teams coach. Now that news has kind of been out of the bag for a little while, but Jonathan Rutledge made it official on Twitter. You have more FPI discussion. Brad Edwards, Mr. FPI with ESPN, has been doing it for years as part of their research department on top of his on-air duties. Brad's going to be with us in an hour. We'll get his take on FPI with Nebraska, what he sees from the Big Red, the deal with hype. And I know you guys spent Monday on it. We talked about it Tuesday. So we'll get Brad's thoughts. Brandon Vogel is awesome, and we'll talk to Vogues tomorrow. He has laid out his version of point spreads, did so in his hot reads yesterday. That's interesting. We can jump into that. I want to spend quite a bit of time the first few minutes on Rob Manfred. He got in front of the microphone and cameras, had a press conference yesterday. More on the Astros cheating scandal. We'll hear from the commissioner on that. Mike Babcock will be with us. Some preliminary spring football thoughts. Mike Shewhart. Shuey is back in. It's Wednesday, so it's a Shuey Talks Golf segment at 4:40. Mentioned Brad Edwards, and then the game that was incredible, had a lot of hype, lived up to it, had a packed house at Miller North. I wish I could have, A, done the game, B, would have been there. But North Star is a lot of fun to watch. We've had a lot of Pius and North Star games. We're going to wrap up with some Southeast. There's been East, and we do our best at covering all Lincoln teams here, and we've been doing that for a lot of years. We love doing it over on KFOR and over on ESPN Lincoln. And what a ball game last night with North Star and Millard North. North Star has major talent. They've got a really talented head coach. They've got incredible players and a good core. And this isn't a one-hit wonder. Coach Quatrochi's had a bunch of good kids for a lot of years. And North Star is always a threat within the city and beyond. And went to the state semis a year ago. So we'll talk with Coach Tony Quatrochi of Lincoln North Star. A nail-biter last night. Millard North winning over North Star 69-67. 8,000 and change there at Millard North. The home of Heisman football-winning quarterback Eric Crouch. You've got three D1 cats on that Millard North squad. Millard North just enough to win. We're not that far removed, 10 days from the Bellevue West game where Donovan went off for 50. And North Star is a 15-7 squad right now that is extremely dangerous and talented. But they'll have to go on the road for a district win in all likelihood here to get back to state. They're one of those teams that you want to see in state. I don't root, but I do appreciate what they are. Pius is really talented. Southeast has a chance to make some noise. And then you've got East that has some really good young talent. Those are some of the teams that we've had a chance to see. Northeast is very, very competitive. And Lincoln High is working their way back up as well. And they've had some really good talent here over the last few years. They're a bit rebuilding right now, but so we'll spend a little bit of time. And you had the lights and cameras on. Hunter Salice was efficient. He was big time last night. 12 of 18, 27 points, 2 for 3 from 3, 5 of 6 from the free throw line. I mean, we're talking highlight reel dunks and tip dunks, and he's nice, and that's an understatement. Donovan Williams wasn't hitting from 3, got to the free throw line, got to the rim, and really helped kind of spread the basketball around. Luke Jurasik got hot, 4 threes in the fourth quarter, made things tight. You had Millard North go up by 14 and then kind of pulled the ball out and try and burn some clock. North Star forced some turnovers, got after it, and you had key free throws hit down the stretch by Millard North to secure a win. You had an overtime loss or another 2-point loss against Bellevue West last weekend. So North Star is right there, and it'd be a shame to not see them get in. There was a year East was at 18-6 one year in high school basketball, and they didn't have enough wild card points. This is the years are blurring for me, but you had a year where they didn't get to state, and it sucked because they were a really good basketball team with some nice wins. But what a showcase you had last night in the state of Nebraska with that Division I talent. You've got Hunter Salice is a 2021 kid that's a 5-star. Jansen Green's a 2022 kid. Both of those guys are Nebraska targets. Donovan, of course, not part of Nebraska's plans. And he's not part of Nebraska's plans anymore, and vice versa. So where can Donovan go? We'll see if things heat up with Oregon. With Donovan, you have Max Morrell that's going to Stanford. Chucky's going to Wisconsin. Wright sells another D1 prospect that's undecided. Jaden Booth's going to UNO. Nebraska, lucky enough to get a guy like Charlie Easley to walk on this year. And, you know, you hear it, and you talked to Bo Reed on Monday. And man, you're getting that feeling where you got generational talent in the state of Nebraska, and you as sure as hell would like to see some of those Nebraska kids stay in Nebraska. There's still time to make a pitch to Hunter, to make a pitch to Green, to make a pitch to some of these guys you think can fit, but specifically a couple of the Millard North studs. Can Nebraska get in the mix with these guys and keep some of your star talent home? And I look at the nucleus of the golden era of Nebraska basketball, and Jeff Smith was an assistant there. Danny Nee was there. You had Jerron Boone, who grew up a lot of his life in Omaha before doing his high school years in Utah. You had Eric Strickland, who's NBA dude. We've talked to Strick before, a Bellevue West guy. You had Terrence Badgett, an Omaha South guy who won a state championship. You had Glock that was there. He was one of the Wahoo boys when they won 1,000 games in a row, it felt like. And then Pytkowski was a Rapid City, South Dakota guy, but we'll count it as part of Northwest Nebraska. And then you had Bruce Chubbuck. I mean, I mean, that core group, a lot of them were Nebraska kids. Andre Woolridge, phenomenal.
Rich Ben, King?
Yeah, Rich King was Omaha Northwest.
Originally from Lincoln, though.
But Rich King played his college, his high school ball in Omaha.
Yeah.
Yeah, Rich King on that 91 team was big time. So, I mean, you saw what kicked off a great run from 90 to 95 and then got revisited with Ty Lue in 97. Markowski's a Nebraska kid. So you want to see some of those kids stay home. And I just hope it can happen. I hope it's a fit. I hope it can happen. But you got some big dogs, especially with Salice. You got him as a 5-star. I mean, KU's right there for Salice, and KU's knocking on the door for Donovan. And you just wonder and go, And I trust Fred. I think Fred knows what he's doing. I think Fred's going to get talent in here. I think Nebraska's going to win. But you would like to do it with Nebraska kids.
I mean, these guys are, as you said, a generational talent. I mean, that and Millard North team hung around an IMG school, which goes into recruits around the country. IMG goes and finds the best basketball players in the country, recruits them, brings them to IMG. Millard North hung around really well.
Yeah, they played well enough to win.
Yeah, exactly. Played well enough to win, lost by 5. And you see North Star go up, take on Millard North at home and only lose by two.
North Star's right there with everybody in Class A.
The talent in Class A state basketball is the best I've ever seen probably in my life.
I can't wait for this state tournament. We're blessed to be able to broadcast it.
I mean, top to bottom,
we've done it for years, and I can't wait.
There's teams that are not going to make the state tournament that would have been playing in a semifinal or maybe even a final in previous years.
Well, North Star is a good enough team to win state.
Yes.
I mean, they have enough balance and talent to do so. You saw Pius do it a year ago where they played the majority of a Class A schedule and were dynamite. And you have near misses with... You're not getting embarrassed or blown out. The talent gap is not Grand Canyon-esque between Metro and Lincoln anymore. And Kearney and some in Grand Island and some of the Central Nebraska schools, they are extremely talented, and they are no easy win if you get by them. I mean, so, God, it's going to be a lot of fun in March here. And of course, a lot of great girls action last night with East and you know, Pius girls fell short, but they're loaded again, as are the East girls. And so, no, just a great night for showcasing Nebraska high school basketball, and props to North Star for their effort. It was just a bit short. Let's spend a minute on baseball here. And Rob Manfred, listen, I don't know if his press conference did him any good. He did a decent job of, I guess, trying to lay out what he was thinking. At first, my take on Manfred was, I kind of scrunched my nose with the thought of immunity, but you needed immunity to finally hash out, lay out some answers, because no one was going to come forward with the risk of punishment. Can baseball and the Astros just totally come clean? You have immunity. Can you lay out a timeline for me? Can you say when this was first thought of, who introduced it, who did or didn't resist going along with it when it comes to the cheating, when it comes to the buzzer, or the alleged buzzer, when it comes to the trash can pounding. Give me some more evidence. Give me an E! True Hollywood story here on what is absolutely the truth here. And the commissioner kind of kicked off his comments last night and Sunday. I mean, he's been getting pinata'd. The Players Association demanded immunity. So that's as much on the Players Association, and to get some sort of resolve with this, he had to grant immunity. I don't believe that there is really any other way. I don't like it, but I don't know that he could go a different way and get answers on what absolutely went down with the Astros, what's presumed to have gone down with Cora in Boston. I mean, you've got your fire starters in this whole scandal, and then you had folks that kept piling the firewood on. And how far back does it go? Has it stopped? We'll also hear from Aaron Judge. Rob Manfred does have an option. You may not yank their title. You may not suspend some of the cheaters. You may have to go public and start handing out brutal suspensions if people keep throwing at Altuve and Bregman and members of the Astros. But you can come out publicly and denounce their actions and censure them. That is one option, and give me a timeline. Here is a bit from Manfred on his Sunday.
You know, I had a long day on Sunday. I think I did 45 minutes on camera, and then I did a press conference. I have to say I made one mistake. At least during that long day. And that was in an effort to make a rhetorical point. I referred to the World Series trophy in a disrespectful way. And I want to apologize for that. There's no excuse for it. I made a mistake. I was trying to make a point, but I should have made it in a more effective way. And again, I want to apologize for it. I will say this. You know, I've awarded 5 World Series trophies. There is no greater pleasure in this job than awarding that trophy. I understand what it means. And again, it was a mistake to say what I said.
So I'm sorry I said it was just a piece of metal. The other mistake was maybe you could have gone to the union heads with the Dodgers, with the Yankees, with the teams that were defeated in the postseason and gotten their input. You're the commissioner. You answer for all of baseball, but I would have talked to the I would have talked to the teams really affected, and that's been the Dodgers and the Yankees over the course of this this cheating scandal. The topic of immunity. Let's sneak this in.
The agreement I made, you know, I intend to live up to, just like every other agreement I've made with the MLBPA for the last 30 years. Whether there's going to be immunity in cases going forward, given the player reaction to this issue, I think that I would have to think long and hard about that. And I do think that on a go-forward basis, it's important for us to establish player accountability on these issues.
So don't cheat. Don't be a scumbag. It's one thing to pick up a sign and code break, and we'll hear from Rob Manfred some more this hour. But get on second base, too. Get your sign. Between the communication and the trash can banging and the videography, I mean, this high-tech, almost Spygate tribute, you got to stop it as a player. You got to want to have that integrity yourself. Mike Babcock with us next. Hail Varsity continues, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
And we're back.
Fellas, you think we could listen to the radio?
On Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Yes! That's awesome!
Back with you, Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, Elijah Herbal. Give us a find on Twitter at Schmidt underscore radio at Herbal Essences. You follow Mike Babcock on Twitter at MD Babs. You read him with HailVarsityMagazine.com. Historian, author, and Hall of Famer. Babbers, how you been?
Hey, I'm doing well. I was listening to you earlier, and Rich King was an Omaha Burke guy.
Burke, not Northwest. Thank you.
Yeah, but he was. You know, there was a story that went with that. His senior year in high school, he shaved something into his hair.
A number, wasn't it?
His number or something, and Coach John Ed got upset with him and benched him, I think.
Well, Rich had was part of that 10-18 squad that turned into a 3 seed in 91. So he went through the downs and then got all the way up with that team.
Oh, tremendously talented team, too. You know, you mentioned Chubbick and Bruce Reed, and Clifford Scales was on that team. And
Tony Farmer's my guy, Bo Reed,
Tony
yeah.
Tony Farmer was a key player there, 6'9". Carl Hayes, DePriest Owens, Keith Moody.
Moody hit the half quarter against Oklahoma to kept Nebraska alive in the Big 8 tournament.
Yep. And then Eric Kwiatkowski was a redshirt freshman, I think.
That was those were great, man. We'd go to Devaney. We'd park in the gravel lot. It'd be 7 below. You'd wait for 17 trains. You'd walk in. You'd get knocked over by the smell of popcorn. I'd pass by Uncle Nate selling Danny knee ties, and we'd go sit in Section B. It was good.
Yeah. Well, now at some point, if you get to that gravel lot, you're going to have to run the 100 meters or something, aren't you? Isn't that where they're building a new track?
It is. But it was always... It was always good, and it was always awesome. And then one day, my brother spilled Mr. Pibb on Steve Taylor's leather coat, and then it got a little funky. But I gotta ask you here about some in-state talent, and I don't want to like brand it as necessary, but you know, Nebraska fans, Mike, you look at the plethora of in-state talent. Some of the kids are seniors for 2020, Donovan and the kid at Central. Nebraska fans, you know what's next, man. If Nebraska basketball doesn't, and they've got Easley, which is awesome. That's underrated completely. But if Nebraska has, let's say, what, 8 to 10 D1 prospects between this year and next go to Power 5 squads, not all of them will, but we'll say six of the 10 will. I mean, Nebraska fans will be freaking out that they didn't stay home.
Well, yeah, and I think now I'm probably in a minority here in terms of really evaluating what you have to do, but I really think that you've got to get those Nebraska guys, and I think that when you look at, you know, what we're talking about here, Rich King, Bruce Chubbick, And then, you know, following them, you had Terrence Badgett.
And Strick, and then even Markowski down the road.
You had, you know, Jerron Boone was not a Nebraska kid, but his dad was.
Yep.
Omaha Tech. Pike had Nebraska connections. I mean, and, you know, Chubbuck was underrated. I think he was really an important guy on those teams. And I think you've got to get those Nebraska kids. I think it's really important. But, you know, I'm not Fred Hoiberg. I'm not that coaching staff. I don't have their game plan, what they want to accomplish. But I really think that, and it's not like Nebraska produces these guys year in and year out in big numbers.
No, it's every 20 years. And the thing that you have now is, Babers, you're in position, because of Hoiberg's pedigree, to probably have a shot at these guys.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and you know, if you go back in the day, there was always that concern, you know, that Ron Kellogg didn't come here, and Bill Jackman initially didn't come here, and you need to get those guys, I think. And you're right, people are going to freak out, and you know, if they don't get some of these guys, and then they go somewhere and they really perform well, that's going to be, you know. Of course, the complaints are going to dissipate if they're successful. Mm-hmm. So that kind of changes the dynamic there. If success will change the attitude about who you need to recruit and who you don't.
Mike Babcock's joining us on Hail Varsity Radio. Mike, Donovan Williams has just set an official visit to Kansas. And then you look at a guy like Hunter Salas, who has interest from Kansas, Gonzaga, Nebraska. And those guys played last night. Can you remember a time in Nebraska high school sports where there's been guys of that magnitude recruiting-wise going at it? I mean, across any sport?
Well, you know, you have to go back, like, When Strickland came here, and Andre Woolridge initially came here and then transferred to Iowa. I mean, that was a pretty good class of players that year. And going back to the Bill Jackman, there were several guys in that year, I think, fell into that and what you're talking about. But this is pretty unique, I think, in recent years. I think for what we're seeing.
Babers, I want to switch gears to our friends at ESPN, the FPI, with the top 25 ranking by Bill Conley, and then 22 is the number next to Nebraska's name with the top 25 with projected squads. Nebraska among six programs that have made monster jumps. And Nebraska fans, do you remember a time Nebraska football fans, and you hear from them still, Mike, that are they're so anti good vibes? I don't want to say good vibes, but they're so cautious. They're so suspicious. Thank you. They are suspicious. Yeah. They're cautious. They don't want to be hurt again. And I get it. But do you remember a season similar to what we're going into here in Nebraska football? And you can go back to, I think, of the 83 scoring explosion. You had a national championship handed to you. At least that was the national feel. I mean, this is a team that can't be beat. You had teams in the 90s that were great, but they were still doubted a bit because they weren't rolling in preseason one or two. But I think in 94 and 95, they were still in that 3-4-5 range. They were still really respected, a danger to win the title. But there was still this love affair with Florida State, Miami, and Notre Dame. And, you know, kind of put into context what Nebraska's looking at here for 2020, and then the fan reaction you're feeling.
Well, you know, for one thing, as Brandon pointed out, I think in a story in the upcoming issue of the magazine, I mean, the ESPN thing, that's numbers. That's you know, it's not necessarily opinion. That's numbers. That's how the numbers shake out, and that's how Nebraska gets in that position. So I think that people look at it now and they just think, you know, we've been burned, or some of the burning comes from within. You know, you get your expectations up to a certain point for all the stuff that's outside of you, and you're not reasonable about how you evaluate it, and then things don't go the way you want, and so now you're in this mentality that you're talking about, Smitty. But But if you go back to those years, I mean, if you look at it through the 80s into the 90s, every year at one point or another, just about every season, Nebraska was in a position where you could say, if things went right, Nebraska could have won a national title. I mean, every season it was like that. Sometimes it was early in the year and they had a bad loss. But, you know, there are, when you're always winning at least nine games and you're always getting to a bowl game, probably somewhere in that season there's an opportunity to get to a national title. So people got a little bit jaded by that, and then they're saying, well, you know, I don't want to get my hopes up again. But when they're talking about their hopes up, they're talking about their hopes about winning a national championship. It's a whole different thing now. You know, getting your hopes up to get into the top 25, getting your hopes up to get to a bowl game. I mean, it's just a different kind of attitude or different kind of approach to the season, and people saying, I don't want to get burned again. It's not the same time. It's not the same type of getting burned. I'm sure people now would love to get burned the way those teams that we're talking about in the 80s and 90s were getting burned, you know, coming up just short. And that's where it comes from. And, you know, the young fans, they don't remember that stuff. That's the thing that I think the older fan doesn't really understand or take into account, is that the players and the young fans, they don't remember what that was like. Yeah. You know, there's no point of reference from that standpoint. So it's a whole different way of looking at college football and your expectations and what it means to get burned again.
Mike Babcock's with us, Hale Varsity Radio, and that's perfect. Let's consider the stage. What is getting burnt? Is it getting to eight or nine wins and being in the thick of a West run and losing on a three-pointer at the end of regulation that crosses the upright? Or is it falling to Florida State in an Orange Bowl where you had a magical season in 93, and then it spurned things on in 94. Babbers, you're a big baseball guy, and I got about 2 minutes here. We're touching on Rob Manfred and the Astros and the cheating scandal. Saw this on Twitter, and Rex Chapman's an NBA guy, and he kind of outlines the anger that exists. And how about a one-year suspension from postseason? The NCAA's handed out postseason bans. Could Manfred do that as part of a censure? Would that quell things? Because right now, folks are ticked about immunity.
Yeah, I don't know if you could. You know, I heard some discussion today about the, you know, vacating that World Series title. As you look at this and you look at all the involvement and so forth, I wonder if maybe that might not be the way to quell the storm, is to just vacate the World Series title in 2017, if that's considered appropriate, and then you can move on from there. But I think it has to be something dramatic. All the players, you know, that are coming out and talking about this sort of thing, I think it probably needs to be something pretty dramatic in order to, as you say, quell the storm. So maybe vacating the World Series title, because that means something. Mm. You know, that's pretty significant, and if you've got clear cut evidence of cheating to get there, maybe that's the way to go.
Well, you do, and you can lay out the truth of it because there's immunity granted. Let's walk through it. Babbers, about 20 seconds. What's coming up in the magazine?
Well, we got a little bit about George Flippin. Got to clarify some things that even I have had wrong in the past. Really a nice story on Kevin Coleman, a super fan. A lot of good stuff in the magazine. Really looking forward to it coming out.
Well, you can subscribe 855-3-HuskerHaleVarsity.com/subscribe. Bundle the digital and magazine. It is an incredible price point. Mike Babcock, historian, author, and Hall of Famer. Babbers, thanks for jumping in today.
Hey, thanks for having me, Smitty.
That was fun, man. Babbers right there at MD Babs on Twitter. Shuey's up next.
And now, back to Hale Varsity Radio.
Brad Edwards coming up. Plenty of FPI, his take on Nebraska, how they're weighing in so high. Yes, it's data, but we'll get into some of that data. Coach Tony Quattrocchi, Mr. Tony, It's coming up at 5:25. Good stuff from Mike Babcock. We say hi to Mike Shuart. Shuey out at Wilderness Ridge. Shuey, I take it you're not making anyone do some chipping from the practice region right now as we see some powder outside.
Yeah, where did the snow come from? I don't like it.
Blame me, dude. Wasn't me. It is interesting, but hey, it could be 70 tomorrow. We know Nebraska. Shuey, I want to get your thoughts here on cheating in sports for just 2 seconds. And we know what's going on with Major League Baseball, the backlash and outcry that's going on. Do you remember an instance in pro golf where some guy knowingly and recklessly fudged the rules, pulled an OJ, and dropped look, I got an extra golf ball in my pocket. Kind of kidding, but kind of not. Is there a cheating instance that has always been burned into your memory in golf?
Oh, yeah. There was very unique circumstances. They used to play a tournament on it was the Hogan Tour at the time, then Nike Tour, but anyway, up in Sioux City at Dakota Dunes, and they had a rainstorm, flooding, and all this, so they're trying to play. So it was like it was crazy because the guys were hitting it in the water, so they were going to call it casual water. But how they were taking their drop from where the ball was in the casual water. So, I mean, guys were taking incorrect drop after incorrect drop.
They're taking a drop like I take.
Like they were 100 to 150 yards incorrect.
Wow.
That'll
help.
So what was weird is that the officials found this out. So after the cut was made, then they went back and started talking to all these guys. Did you hit it here? What kind of drop did you take? Then they started disqualifying guys, which then moved the cut to something, a different number. So it was a mess. It was crazy. But guys knew it. They were taking an incorrect drop, and they were, like I said, they were gaining 100 to 150 yards. So it's like they were basically cheating.
How did the tournament director find this out? Did players come forward?
Yeah, somebody came forward and said, I mean, this guy dropped it here. Are they playing it that way? Or whatever. And he said, no, it's just a regular casual water. So it's like, well, where did your ball last cross?
Mm-hmm.
It's not where you think it ended up and then you come directly out from there. It's where it crossed into the casual water. So then it's like, uh-oh, we need to figure out who did, who didn't. And it's like, well, then you had guys that actually did do it, but then they said they didn't do it, so they would still make the cut and not be disqualified. So it's like, first of all, they cheated by taking the incorrect drop. Then they lied about it. And there was a couple incidents that got really heated because one guy said, no, you did this. The guy said, no, I didn't. And it's like, if you don't, you know, if it's my word against their word, you can't really prove it. Now, if he had the group that said, no, he did do that, that would have been a different story. But there was a couple instances where it got really heated because the one guy said, no, you dropped it incorrectly. The other guy said, no. And it was just him against the other guy. So, no, they couldn't disqualify him.
Mike Babcock is with us on Hail Varsity Radio. Oh, sorry, not Mike Babcock. Mike Shuart, excuse me. So sorry about that, Mike. Got my mics mixed up on a Monday or on a Wednesday. I'm all sorts of messed up. But I remember a couple years ago.
Told you he's been into the vodka shoeing.
Well, I remember a couple years ago at the Masters, whenever Tiger took a drop and a fan at home saw like his divot from his last shot and said, that's an incorrect drop. And they called the PGA. And that kind of reminds me of the Astros where you have John Boy on Twitter who's posting the videos of them hitting the trash cans. Do you think that fans are overstepping their part in the game?
They actually made a rule on the tour now that you can't call in or they won't take that information. So to just alleviate kind of those situations because again you have so many fans calling in and half of them, not half, a high percentage of them, I mean they're just thinking, not really knowing. You know, but there are those cases where the guy was right in what he saw and what happened. Most of the time it's wrong. I mean, the people are just calling in to call in and think that they did something wrong. So I think it's good because it's like you don't need people calling in policing these guys. That's part of the game. You're supposed to police yourself, you know, and if you get caught, you're going to you're gonna pay the price for it. You know, look at what's happening with Patrick Reed right now.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it is going crazy. You know, because now people are coming forward on different instances where he basically has kind of done what he did previously, and he's now has a reputation of fudging the rules, and he's taking a beating for it.
Mike Shewhart's with us, Wilderness Ridge Golf, and can find Shuey out at Wilderness Ridge, even on snow-covered Wednesdays and indoor heating practice bin. You can get folks geared up. You've got Fit Fridays on the horizon when it's sunny and green outside. I mean, lots of things going on with Wilderness. Spring football also around the corner, Shuey. And Shuey, what do you believe about Nebraska? You've seen the FPI. You are a guy that's good with his eyes. You also pay attention to data. And you have Nebraska fan out there that doesn't want to get hurt again. What's your outlook on 2020?
Cautiously optimistic.
we're printing those shirts this year.
I mean, if you look at what's there, I mean, you have a somewhat of an experienced quarterback, which you need. You have your best wide receiver coming back. You need to help him. You know, you have some young guys that have had a redshirt year. You know, the biggest concern is you're gonna be young and inexperienced in a lot of positions. You know, so it's like how quickly do those guys get up to speed? Because the end of the season is going to be brutal. So, but
yes, it will.
But can they get through the first part of the season where it's a little bit easier, so to speak, you know, and get better and better and better? I don't know. I think they're going to be better, and I think the record will be better, you know. So it's like I think they're going to continue to get better. I think they have the talent there now. They need more of it. Mm-hmm. They're building some depth, you know. But you just don't know. I mean, and injuries are such a key.
Yeah.
You know, they're not super deep, so they get hurt in the wrong spots. I mean, they're going to be in trouble. But I'm optimistic that they'll be better, you know, and I think they'll finally take another jump to where they look kind of like what they've been advertised to look like.
Mm-hmm.
So at least that's what I'm hoping.
And that's fair. And their record will be, your hope's better than 5-7. You hope you're going postseason somewhere. Dare I say it, even to Detroit, you know, at 6-6 or whatever. But just play better. And I think the thing that Nebraska fans want to see is just make some plays. Take siege of the momentum if you get a chance to kind of flip it in your favor. Because you had leads last year. You just didn't handle your business. Shuey, we'll be out to see you sometime soon, man. Get that snow out of here. And thanks for what you're doing with them Divot Dogs and helping folks get better on the course. We'll talk next Wednesday, bud.
All right. Appreciate it. Have a good one.
You too. There he is, Mike Shuey with us, Wilderness Ridge Golf, winding down hour one next.
He's in his 30s, but sounds like he was born with a stogie in one hand and a brew in the other.
Now, say my name.
It's Schmitty on Hail Varsity Radio.
I got the body of a taut preteen Swedish boy.
Thank you, Kramer. Brad Edwards, 10 minutes away, ESPN insider, college football guru, and part of the FPI, part of Stats and Research with ESPN. We'll get his thoughts on Nebraska and these numbers tied to the Big Red in 2020. Coach Tony Quattrocchi of Lincoln North Star, great ball game last night. Tough finish for the Navigators as they were right there again against a Metro Power. We'll get Coach Quattrocchi's take on last night. We spent some time on Rob Manfred and the issue of immunity, Mike Babcock and Mike Shuey this hour. And again, Coach Quattrocchi coming up along with Brad Edwards. A reminder about your friends at West Blue Realty. And are you looking for a home in the Lincoln area or surrounding residential communities? West Blue can help with that move in 2020. For a limited time, you mentioned Hail Varsity, West Blue can provide up to $1,000 on the closing of your next home purchase. Give Tom Luby a shout at 402-540-3768 or Kelly Hofschneider, 402-202-2312 for more details. It pays to work with West Blue. And when it comes to West Blue Realty, if you have agricultural land, they can take care of you. They've got an auctioneer. They can handle anything from live auctions, sealed bid, general land listings, and they've sold land in Seward and Otto counties and Lancaster counties this year. They can help with a large radius of land you want to unload. And they are located, West Blue is, in Lincoln, 1120 K Street, Suite 200. Log on today. Go see Tom or Kelly, westbluerealty.com. We have three pair of tickets to give away shortly to Lucas Nelson. Lucas Nelson is tremendously talented. He'll be at the Bourbon the 27th of March. So we want to send you there in a moment. Let's squeeze in one more thought from Rob Manfred on his situation, him handling the Astros, the censure issue we have talked about. Is that something that can come into play? Can he just say, look, we're going SMU on you for a year, and you are not going to participate in the postseason? This is a little bit here from Manfred here about determining immunity, cut eight, and this is how he kind of went about it.
Our early efforts were not particularly successful in terms of making progress with the investigation. My office then contacted the MLBPA to request player cooperation. We wanted players to submit to interviews. The MLBPA asked if we had a disciplinary intention. I think the response was that we could not rule that out. The union indicated to us that that would be a problem. We went back and suggested to them we would give them an initial list of people, players, that we would grant immunity to, preserving our ability to discipline other players. And the union came back and said that players would cooperate only if there was blanket immunity. And because we were at a bit of a stalemate, we knew we needed player witnesses, we agreed to that immunity agreement.
There's part of his reasoning. Let's get you a pair of Lucas Nelson tickets. Going to be at the Bourbon the 27th of March. Three pair right now. 466-377-6800-825-5865. Three pair. First come, first serve. Caller 1 through 3 now for Lucas Nelson.
Welcome to Hail Varsity Radio, the voice of Husker Nation. Insight, opinion, expertise, with the biggest and best names talking Nebraska across the state. Join the show on Twitter at Hail Varsity and at Schmitz underscore radio. Call in at 402-466-ESPN or 1-800-825-5865. Here's Chris Schmitz.
Welcome to an hour two at Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, Elijah Herbel. We welcome in with ESPN College Game Day, ESPN Insider, and part of the data and stats and research that goes on with ESPN and FBI. We say hi back to Brad Edwards at J. Brad Edwards on Twitter. Brad, you guys have done it again, man. We're buzzing about Nebraska FBI. How are you?
I'm doing well, thanks. I'm trying to think where the show was on Monday. I was on a show. It might have been somewhere in Alabama. And the host made a comment about, well, he said, I know of nothing else. You guys got Nebraska fans really excited. So
depends on what Nebraska fan you talk to, because the backlash is no. No credit, no hype. Stay away from that vanity mirror. Let's earn it on the field, because Nebraska fans, Brad, they are hurt, my friend. They are hurt that there's expectations again.
Yeah, I get that. You know, you want to fly under the radar, and I'm not sure if this would make them feel good or not, but Last year, one of the teams that was a pretty big riser from the end of 2018 to the preseason 2019 rankings, and a lot of their fans did get excited, was Tennessee.
Mm-hmm.
And they started very poorly, you may remember, last
yep.
year, and people were like, what was FPI thinking? What? They turned out to, you know, to be a pretty solid team when it was all said and done, but it was a really rough start. So I don't know if Nebraska fans would take that right now, but that's what happened a year ago with one of the teams that FPI was a lot bigger on than the general public.
Brad Edwards with us from ESPN Radio, ESPN Game Day, and of course part of the research department with ESPN and FPI. Brad, let's just give folks a look-see, and you and I talked this time of year about FPI because the last 2 years Nebraska has been a mover and shaker. Their ranking or hype didn't really match where they came in on FPI. They were one of those it teams a year ago because it's supposed to be that Frost year two jump. And the win total and win projection and win percentages did not match up with where they are at this year. Folks are freaking out about the schedule and the close to 2020. Nebraska could be a better team. It could be touch and go with bowl eligibility again. Lay out for me and the listeners just your kind of association with FPI and what goes into the data, because this isn't opinion. This is numbers you guys have run.
Right. Yeah. So I work very closely with our analytics team, and they're the ones that put together FPI. And let me just start by giving you the inputs. This is what goes into it, and I don't think you'll find it too different from, you know, what you and your listeners talk about mm-hmm. for most of the offseason when you're trying to analyze teams and who's going to be good and who won't be. Starts with, you know, how good have you been recently? And the previous season matters more than the season before that, which matters more than the season before that. But overall, it's looking at the previous 4 years. You know, obviously, last year is important, but consistency over the previous years is important as well. You're more likely to trust a team that's been good for the last 4 years than you are one that just kind of came out of nowhere a year earlier. So that's that part of it. The next thing, very common, returning starters. Okay, so we look at both offense and defense, and we kind of rate the units separately. And there is a small special teams input, too, but most of it comes from offense and defense. And so you look at who's back. Well, I shouldn't say that. You look at how many are back. And on offense, if the quarterback is one of them, one of the returning starters, then that counts a little bit more than any other player on the team. And I would just kind of interject here that one of the things that we're working on right now in the off season that we might actually change in the next version of FPI that comes out, we've developed a better method, and we're kind of testing it right now, of gauging what's returning rather than using starters. It's just, for a long time, starters is really all you had to go off of. Now we have a lot of data that can give us a better idea of, you know, who played, not just who started, but among the guys who are coming back, how much did they play if they weren't starters? And even the ones who started, how much did they play? How good were they? That obviously is an important question to ask, too. So those are things that go in. Is the head coach back? FPI considers continuity a big deal if you look at teams across the board. So that would be something where if your head coach from the previous year is back, that helps as long as you weren't really bad the year before. And then the recruiting profile plays a small part in it. You know, the previous four classes, that would be part of FPI and what it's looking at. And then one other thing I'll throw in before you follow up is that what you see right now is not a prediction. This is basically a ranking of how good the teams are expected to be, totally independent of what your schedule is. The next version of FPI that comes out in April will then look at the schedules, not just how good you are, how good are the teams you play, where play them, all that. And so, I mean, you can quite often find teams that FPI ranks in the top 25 and projects to be 7-5, 6-6 if their schedule is really tough. So just because you're a top 25 team rating-wise by FPI, that doesn't in itself mean that FPI believes that you're going to finish in the top 25 of the polls when it's all said and done.
Thank you for that clarification, because this is phase one. Phase two will look at Nebraska's final five and Ohio State's two, Penn State's five, Wisconsin's six. You have Iowa in at 27, Minnesota's in at 20, and Nebraska gets Penn State and Minnesota at home. The rest of it is John Wayne time on the road, not to mention Luke Fickle and Cincy roll into town in South Dakota State that scared the bejesus out of Minnesota a year ago. So the schedule's not easy. Nebraska fans are, I don't know that they're yet too cautiously optimistic, that side of things yet, but spring ball will get rolling here in a little bit, and there'll be some renewed energy and hype. I want to go back to the quarterback, and that's a question mark here. Adrian Martinez was not right. He was dinged. He had inconsistency at wide receiver, in my opinion. It took Nebraska's ground game to get going a little bit. The O-line needed to come together. All those things were real last year, and Adrian tried to tough it out, but he was a far cry from his freshman year. And the Big Ten is full of really brilliant minds, and they adjusted to him as well. And you didn't see a lot of downfield attempts, Brad. You didn't see a lot of running. You saw some, but you didn't see as much as you did freshman year from Adrian. And let's dive into that quarterback piece for Nebraska. Yes, you have a quarterback that's back, but when you look at quarterbacks around the country for teams that are poised and ready to make a jump, how do you view this sophomore season from Adrian as you look at Nebraska moving forward?
Yeah, so one of the things FPI does with that returning quarterback is it's assuming that if the quarterback is back, that the offense should be closer to what it was a year earlier than if he's not back. So just because the quarterback's back doesn't mean that FPI is assuming the offense will be good. It just assumes that it will be similar to what it was a year earlier. And I, off the top of my head, I don't even know what Nebraska's offense was rated at the end of last year and what it is right now in the preseason. But if it's not good, and I would think it wasn't great for Nebraska last year, then there is the opportunity. I mean, there's a high ceiling there. You know, there's a lot of room to grow, I guess, would be the way that I would say it. And, you know, given what Frost was able to do at UCF, and I'm sure at this point Nebraska fans are sick and tired of hearing UCF. You want to, you know, see it happen in Lincoln. It's not like you've got a coach who's never done it, you know, who's sure. Never had offenses that could bust a grape. So I just look forward to seeing what he's able to do, how they adjust, you know, how they improve. You know, if health is something that you think could make him a much better quarterback, then obviously that's a big part of this as well. And so, but I think there are going to be all sorts of fan bases around the country who are going to spend this offseason talking about Joe Burrow. And they're going to say, look what Joe Burrow was at LSU in 2018, and then look what he was in 2019. And if a guy can make that much improvement from one season to the next, why can't our guy? And those are incredibly rare leaps. I don't know if we've seen too many like that in college football history, guys going from what Joe Burrow was one year to the next. But you do sometimes see significant improvement. And, you know, a lot of it has to do with comfort in the system. In the case of LSU, it wasn't just, you know, comfort as far as just, you know, being around the program and teammates and comfort there, but they actually put in a new system, and that probably contributed a good deal to it as well. So exactly where Adrian would fall in all of that, I don't know, but certainly you would think that he's only going to be better from what he was a year ago, and you know, the quarterback is just such a huge part of an offense that if he's better, you would think the offense would have a chance to be a good bit better as well.
ESPN College Football Insider Brad Edwards is joining us on Hail Varsity Radio. And Brad, I agree in that I think Adrian is going to have a bounce back better year this year. But one thing that's not better for the Huskers is their schedule. In a 5-week stretch, they play at Ohio State versus Penn State at home, at Iowa, at Wisconsin, and they host Minnesota. Just in terms of brutal schedule, I mean, stretches, how brutal is that?
Yeah, you know, that's the question that I can answer a little bit better, at least a little bit better with, as far as putting some perspective on it, when we come out with the next version of FPI, because one of the things that we can run, and we often do this, is looking around the country at, you know, what are the toughest 3-game stretches, 4-game stretches, 5-game stretches, and that one sounds like one that would definitely be up there. I mean, that is brutal, and that's scary. You know, if you're a fan of a team that has to face that gauntlet, and you know, I mean, let's be honest. How many times in the last 5 years, maybe even more than that, has Nebraska beaten a team like the ones that you just mentioned? You know, I mean, home or road. How many games against teams like that have they won?
They beat Sparty. They beat playoff Sparty in 15, and that's it, brother.
Yeah. So. That's what's scary, is because given what Nebraska's recent track record is, it's very easy to look at that and say, we could go 0-5, you know, and you might be playing that game of, if we can just win one of those, if we can go 1-4, and that, you know, that puts a damper on a season in a hurry. I mean, hopefully your coaches and your team aren't looking at it from that perspective. maybe they're taking it one game at a time, like they always talk about, and they haven't looked that far ahead. But yeah, I mean, when you're sitting there looking at a stretch where you've got that, if you don't win at least one of those games, you're going to have your work cut out for you just to be bowl eligible. So that's tough. And look, it places a lot of importance, you know, on those games that you look at right now and you say you're supposed to win, because you go drop one of those, and with the rest of that coming later, man, that'll really put you in a major hole before the season's, you know, hardly gotten going.
Brad, I think Nebraska fans are upside down with finding a game that you're supposed to win. With some fans, that's even in doubt, because you've misstepped on even some non-Power 5 teams.
Yeah.
I've got about 90 seconds left. I want your thoughts, and I don't know if you can give us the secret sauce when it comes to determining point spreads or win percentage, but with the FPI different phases, you have the initial come out this time of year, and then you look at schedules, and then we'll get to the summertime and you'll have percentages. And I looked at the win percentages you guys put up for Minnesota, and you've been accurate. FPI has been accurate with win, total win projection, 7-5, 6-6 versus ranking. And the win projection has usually been on point with a lot of programs. How do you guys get into establishing an early point spread and then a win probability?
Yeah, so the FPI ranking is based on a rating.
Okay.
And the rating is how many points above or below an average FBS team you're deemed to be.
Mm-hmm.
And that, yeah, I mean, just pretty simply,
okay,
the gap between the teams in points is pretty much what the point spread would be according to FPI on a neutral field. Now, of course, then you start to adjust a little bit, 2.5 to 3 points for home field advantage, depending on where the game is, and that's one way to get. I don't know if the current version of FPI has posted the point. I have them, but I don't know if they're up there on .com yet.
Sure, I don't think they are.
But once you can see the points column, then you get an idea for how much of a gap FPI believes there is between, you know, you and the opponent in a given game. And then the winning percent chance to win is based off of that. And then there are, like, I think it's 20,000 simulations that we run every single day of the season based on those winning percentages for each game. And it basically, you know, it spits out a projected win total. And of course it's never like 7-5. It's like, you know, 7.3 and, you know, whatever it may be. And it also factors in the number of times that you've reached the conference championship game, et cetera. So it ends up being fairly complicated, but yeah, it's all based on that points column.
Brad, awesome to chat with you. We'll do this again. Thanks for your insight today.
Always a pleasure. I just love love talking college football in February whenever I get an excuse.
I love it, man. Take care, Brad. Appreciate you.
All right. See you, Chris.
Back into it at Hale Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Incredible ball game last night, Miller North and Lincoln North Star. The Gators just short. We say hi to head coach Tony Quattrocchi of North Star. Coach, your impressions of last night, what'd you think of your kids?
Well, I tell you what, I was very proud of our team. You know, we were down 14 fourth quarter. We kind of had to have a warrior attitude, mentality. We knew what we were going up against very well. Scouted on Millard North, and to come back in that environment, you know, it was a sold out crowd, to give ourselves a chance to win at the end of the game says a lot about what our potential is. I mean, it's kind of a similar situation the week before at Bellevue West. So both with the number one, two ranked teams, whatever you want to call them, we were in positions to win the game. So we're just going to keep learning from these experiences. But I was very, very proud of how our kids played. Couple things we could have done differently, we would have had a chance to win it, but hey, we'll just keep getting better and learn from it.
Well, you guys have been right there against some of the who's who, and you yourself, your team and your kids are right there in that conversation, as well as you've played against some of the Metro. And what did you see from your kids, if we can go back to the Bell West ball game, did you see him apply some of those lessons last night?
Yeah, we realized from the Bell West game we had to play more consistent defense because we gave up 91 points, and that's credit to Bell West too. But I think our kids, they wanted to play man-to-man against Miller North, and most teams that have been right with Miller North have played zone. But our kids' mentality is we're a man program. We've been playing man defense all year. So we learned from the Bell West game that we had to dig in and get in a stance and try to play a little better defense, and I thought we did that against Miller North. They missed shots. We had a hard time always boxing them out because they're so athletic. But certainly from the Bell West experience, to get more consistent in getting stops against the top teams, you have to do that to beat them. And I think that was something we learned from Bell West and applied it to really Kearney, Miller West, and Miller North last night.
Tony Quattrocchi is with us, head coach, Lincoln North Star, Hale Varsity Radio. Big-time matchup last night. Touch on the atmosphere. You've been in big games. Your kids have been in big games. You've been in state tournament games.
Sure.
But you've been out to the cage, and you were at Miller North last night. What was it like last evening?
I tell you what, it was phenomenal. I mean, I told the kids before, your opportunities we've had this year to play in the Christmas in the Cage match at Prep, and then to play at Bell West, play at Kearney, and then last night in front of a sold-out crowd, Miller North, I'm sure they shut the doors with time remaining before the game. It was just incredible. There was, you know, people from all over the state I saw there, really, and college coaches. I can't even begin to tell you how many were there watching. So, you know, our kids have been in a state tournament atmosphere last year, being the state semifinals in front of probably 10,000 people. So we have been in these environments numerous times, and we usually have a mentality that we're going to step on the floor and compete as hard as we can and give ourselves a chance to win. And every one of those situations, we've been down to the wire in all of those games. But it was a lot of fun. I wish it would have turned out a little differently at the end, but I think our kids, you know, it's an experience they're going to learn or, you know, remember for the rest of their life.
Coach, what happened in the second half and specifically the fourth quarter where you guys made your charge? You mentioned you were down 14, and then right there at the end, I know Miller North hit some free throws and kind of finished it out that way. But Donovan, his first half compared to his second half, what did you see different?
Well, you know, again, just never going to give up, going to keep competing hard. When we got up, or when we got behind, like we did with 5 minutes to go, Miller North kind of ran a more of a spread, pull the ball out type offense, which, you know, that's their what they chose to do. We got up and pressured the ball and forced actually a few turnovers. We only had 5 turnovers ourselves. We forced 10 last night, which is saying a lot against that team. We were able to convert those turnovers into some easy baskets, and then, you know, Luke Duracek got really hot in the fourth quarter. He hit 4 threes in the fourth quarter, and he's a really good shooter. And no, there's usually not a lot of attention on him with, you know, with Donovan and Quat out there. So he really rallied us. Donovan just kept driving hard to the hole, was able to shoot and make a lot of free throws in the fourth quarter, and we applied full court pressure, which I thought was pretty effective. Problem is, they got so many playmakers that, you know, we were forced to foul a little bit, and St. Thomas made some big free throws at the end. So, you know, just we just kept fighting and competing, and we knew, you know, we've been in these situations before against the very best teams, and we knew in the huddle that we thought maybe they'd get a little tight at the end because the pressure was on them, not on us, and I think we played like that.
What have you done, if anything, to help Donovan through the recruiting process as far as all the eyes that are in to see him? And I'm sure Coach Cannon's going through the same thing with with Hunter. And just you've got the hype around these young guys that are uber talented and, you know, good teammates, and they want to win. So how do you navigate all of that?
Well, you know, ever since the Nebraska thing changed with Donovan, we've had a galore of college coaches in our building watching at our games. And I don't know how many were there last night, but I try to stay in constant communication with Donovan, you know, obviously meeting with him almost on a daily basis before practice about where things are. I think the plan is for Donovan is to kind of narrow it down to five, you know, once he gets five offers, which I'm sure is coming, and then take official visits after our season's over. But, you know, it's totally up to him, you know, what he decides to make for those decisions of where he's going to go for official visits. He's got some very good offers already. I know last night I talked to the assistant coach at Oregon for quite a while after our game. They're now very interested. So we'll see where this all goes. They're, you know, the thing is, he's just, there's so much attention on him every time we play. And that's a challenge for a high school kid with these crowds, you know, wherever we go, saying things that are tough for a high school kid to hear. But he plays through that, makes his competitive fire even, I think, more to be able to be successful in games. So I give Donovan a lot of credit with the microscope he's under and how he's handled really the last 2 months. There's not a lot of high school kids that have been put under this microscope, and he's really handled it well.
Tony Quattrocchi is with us, head coach North Star. A couple more minutes, Hail Varsity Radio. Great ball game last night for just prep sports, to be honest, when you look at North Star and Millard North, and you guys have had a schedule. You'll be battle-tested as the season moves forward, 15-7 with the schedule you've had. It's an incredible record, and you've been right there on a lot of coin flip games. And I saw your team and covered your team last year in state, and it was a pleasure to do so, and have seen your kids quite a bit this year. Donovan's a known commodity. Luke was huge in the fourth. Abdul Karim has been really big time for you. Touch on your role guys and your starters, your expectations for them, and how they've delivered for you as this season's gone on. They're pretty resilient, it looks like.
Very much so. We've kind of had two different seasons, because without Donovan, we were 7-3, and that's where Quat Abdul Karim was averaging about 23 a game. Another kid that's really come on that's also a junior, because Quat is a junior, Josh Brown, has had a big season for us. He's averaging around 12 or so, but he's probably scored more than that before Donovan. And then, obviously, Jared Lopez is back as a three-year starter. But, you know, we've had some other kids that are coming off the bench and helping us a lot. But the key for us, I think, moving forward is to continue to try to get everybody involved, because we have other scorers, as we've proven. The kids have proven it on the floor in games other than Donovan. Donovan's obviously the focal point. But that's going to be the key, I think, moving forward in the districts. I think if we can make it back to state, and that's going to be a challenge, because there's so many really good Class A teams that, you know, we're right there, and we could win the state tournament, but we got to get there, and that's going to be a tough challenge. But I think our kids are definitely, you mentioned, battle tested. They'll be ready to go wherever we end up going. You know, win the first game and go on to the district championship game, which will be on the road for us.
That's what I wanted to get into. You're looking one game at a time, clearly, but there's a bigger horizon out there. Yeah. As you sit right now, I mean, what are the paths for you guys? I mean, what are the options when it looks to going on the road?
Well, every game counts as far as wild card points with NSAA. So these games this weekend, Friday and Saturday, there's more games. So we'll know Sunday. The odds are we'll certainly host the first round, and then if we are good enough to win that game, then we'll move on to the road likely heading up to Omaha to, you know, one of those schools that are above us right now in the rankings, and it could be a variety of teams. I don't want to predict yet, sure. But it's one of those top metro teams. It probably wouldn't be Millard North or Bellevue West, but one of the next tier, and they're very good, voted with talent, be one of those teams. So we're kind of pointing in that direction. We know we're going to have to go on the road, which we did last year. We went to Kearney and won in district. So, again, with the experience we have coming back, our kids will be up for that challenge. We just got to kind of take it one game at a time with senior night this Friday and move on from there.
Tony Quattrocchi with us, Coach. Before we say goodbye, touch on the level of basketball you're seeing in the state of Nebraska. You've hosted, you've traveled to, you've seen a number of big-time opponents, and, I mean, this seems like a flood of Division I talent maybe that we haven't seen since Badgett, Strickland. I mean, go back to some of the, you know, the Nebraska kids late 80s, early 90s.
It's unbelievable. I mean, the senior class has a few, you know, with Donovan, the Mural kid, Jaden Booth at UNO, and I'm probably forgetting somebody. Oh, Reitzel at Central's incredibly talented. And then you go into the junior class, my gosh, Millard North has obviously Salas, who's a legitimate five-star player. And then you got the St. Thomas kid, who's really good, and they got other kids. And then, you know, I'm forgetting other kids, but, you know, I've talked to your cohort there, Jeff Smith, about this.
Sure.
And, you know, I was working with him for years, and this, as far as the overall number of high quality players, it's Division One. This is as good as I recall. And, you know, I've been head coach for 17 years, but worked with Jeff at Southeast for probably about 8 before that. So this is as good as I've seen as far as overall top level Division One talent in our state. It's pretty amazing.
What do you attribute that to? Obviously, great water in Lincoln and Omaha, but do you just the growth of youth hoops help and pay it forward?
I think that's part of it. I think, you know, we don't want kids to specialize.
Right.
We want multi-sport athletes. I mean, that has always been the case, but I know some kids do, and that's their choice. But some of that's the year-round type of atmosphere with AAU basketball, even though some elements of that are not necessarily the greatest for development.
Right.
But there's a variety of factors. Plus, they just, now we had, you know, for us here at North Star, I hark back to, you know, Tyler Bullock, who we started out with, and then Trisden Simpson, who's currently playing at South Dakota. Those are Division I players. And Josiah Alec is a freshman starting for UMKC. So we've kind of got a thing going here where they just kind of are role models for each other. That's at our school here. I know other schools are different, but I think that's a part of it, too. They just have role models that they want to be like and work hard to be, you know. For Donovan, it was probably Trisden, and for Trisden, it was probably somebody else. So that's kind of how it's going here.
Coach Quattrocchi, awesome to spend a few minutes with you. Thanks for the time today.
You bet. You bet, Chris. Nice talking to you.
Chime in 402-466-ESPN or email the show, chris@hailvarsity.com.
Just try me. Try me.
Back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Talk, talk. Back with you, it's Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Going to get into a Jock Doc segment here with Dr. Brandon Seifert, Lincoln Orthopedic Center, and Monte Kavas, tough loss for Nebraska. We're going to hear from Dr. Brandon here in just a second on that. Maybe. More chances for you to win. Gave away 3 pair of Lucas Nelson tickets. Give some more away tomorrow. Down at Longwells, 4-6 ahead of Nebraska, Michigan State. We'll see you at Longwells, 4-6. Loaded up for that. Sparty is in town. I'm actually taking the wife since Junior's out at spring training, which is nice. Get him out of the house for a few days. But excited to check out Nebraska. Here is our Jock Talk with Lincoln Orthopedic Center. Back with you, Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Time for a Jock Doc Wednesday. Lincoln Orthopedic Center, Dr. Brandon Seifert with us. Dr. Brandon, how you doing?
I'm great, Chris. How you guys doing?
Doing all right, man. Need things to warm up and spring to get here. We're not far away from college basketball postseason tournament, the NCAA, and, of course, the Big Ten tournament. Nebraska's had a tough year, and a guy I really have enjoyed watching as a graduate transfer, Monte Kavas, was a guy that kind of found his way out of the rotation but stayed ready and had played well, had a tough go of it on Saturday for the Big Red, as he's got a thumb injury here. Let's talk a little bit about what happened in the recovery with him.
Yeah, and so, again, not a ton of specifics out there, but just kind of based on what they're saying, we'll speculate here on as to what he has going on. So, you know, as we always talk about, you know, kind of anatomically speaking with thumb. So if you think about kind of the inside part of the thumb or the side of the thumb that's on the side of the small finger, we call that the ulnar side. If you kind of feel along that first kind of joint along that thumb, there's a ligament there called the ulnar, kind of like in the elbow, ulnar collateral ligament, UCL ligament. It's one of those ligaments that provides a stability to basically kind of, if you will, the knuckle part of the thumb. And essentially what that does is that ligament provides stability. For example, if you're taking your index finger and you're pushing on the inside of your thumb to the outside, as you do that, that's pretty solid, pretty stable. If you have an injury to that ulnar collateral ligament at the base of the thumb, what happens is you take your index finger, you push on the side of your thumb, you can really kind of push the thumb off to the side and create kind of an instability component. It's not a super common injury, but just in terms of sports injuries to the thumb, probably is the most common sports injury to the thumb. And essentially what happens is, like anything, there's varying levels of injuries to that thumb and to that ligament itself. Again, kind of going grade one up to grade three, or your grade ones and twos, a little bit of instability, but a good kind of end point where there's a good stopping point. Typically, with those type of injuries, you can leave those alone, treat them non-operatively, stabilize them in a splint for a couple of weeks. Versus you get to that kind of higher level where you've completely torn that ligament or torn it enough that there's no kind of firm endpoint to it. And then what happens is that as you lose that that ligamentous piece, what's important about that is if you take a sheet of paper and kind of pinch it between your thumb and your index finger, patients who have high-grade tears that are not able to do that, they're not able to generate that kind of that apposition movement, if you will. And that's likely what's happened to him. It sounds like he's going to see a hand specialist. They're talking about, you know, potential surgical intervention, and that's probably where he's headed.
Soft tissue injury involving that ligament in the left hand, and that's not his shooting hand, but it's his guide hand. And what – take me through the scenarios here of what could cause this injury. Are you battling down low? Is it a pass where you caught it, it went wrong, and you jam it to the point where you have a tear? I mean, I know a ton of things can happen with your digits on the basketball court.
Mm-hmm. You know, and essentially what it is, as you kind of recreate that moment of taking your index finger, pushing along the inside of the thumb, it's any kind of moment directed in that force. So it's what we call kind of a radial-sided directed force. So as you kind of push that thumb to the inside, what happens is, obviously, that stretches the ligament out. So think about, you know, reaching for a ball. Thumb maybe catches on to either, you know, the player running after a ball, or you catch your thumb on the side of somebody's jersey as they're kind of running away from you to the side. That could catch it and tear it. You know, if you're going up to maybe block a shot on somebody, again, the ball kind of tips off the end of your thumb and basically jams it or pushes it to the inside. Those would be pretty common ways to do it. You know, on the football field, if obviously even the basketball court, if you fall down, kind of put an outstretched hand out, sometimes you can catch the thumb of the court and that'll stretch it. You know, as we talked about kind of varying levels of this, you know, again, the ligament injury itself is kind of the main focus. But what can happen with these is you can have that ligament's pretty strong. You can actually have a part of that ligament pull off a piece of bone. And then sometimes what will happen is you pull off a piece of bone, you can actually have that will actually block it from another ligament, will kind of slide in between, kind of block it from basically healing back. And that's another thing that would kind of put you in that surgical category.
Dr. Brandon Seifert's with us, Lincoln Orthopedic Center at Jock Doc Wednesday. We're talking about Monte Kavas, Husker player that is done for the year with a thumb injury. When it comes to recovery and procedure and intervention, at what point do you have to decide to go do some surgery versus letting it heal? Obviously, it's the severity of the tear here, but let's discuss here the different things that Monte's probably thinking about here moving forward.
Yeah, and so always with these soft tissue injuries, These ligaments in general are not very big, especially in the hand. And so what happens is, you know, again, the longer you leave these before, you know, instituting some surgical treatment, those ligaments tend to scar in, they tend to shrivel up, and it makes it much more difficult as you kind of wait, you know, further along the pathway with these. So we like to see the get after these kind of right away. That way the injury is pretty acute, tissue is pretty fresh, still kind of maintains some fairly normal kind of anatomic integrity. So it makes it easier to see, makes it easier for the tissue to still be pretty tough to sew back together, repair back together. And so this would be something you want to get after within the first 1 to 2 weeks. 3 is kind of weeks kind of getting down the road, but probably still possible at that point. But that would be basically where you would go from kind of a direct primary repair. They are doing some newer kind of fancier techniques on these. For example, if you catch these kind of more of a chronic injury, somebody's had kind of developed chronic instability or just did not get it treated right away, tried to play through it during the football season, you can actually put some kind of artificial suture or ligamentous constraint in there. That is something that is called like an internal brace, tightrope type construct that you can utilize. That would be something you could use more in kind of a chronic situation type.
Well, and, you know, this is too far gone to try and play with throughout the year and be able to defend. And most importantly, when you look at his position and his height to rebound. So the safe play is to get it looked at, get it fixed, and then see what Kavas can do the next level and the next move for him career-wise. And maybe it's some overseas ball. Really talented big guy, a stretch four that can shoot threes. And I loved his attitude and fan. Dr. Brandon Seifert's with us, Lincoln Orthopedic Center. A Jock Doc Wednesday talking about the thumb injury to Monte Kavas. Dr. Brandon, we'll get caught up soon.
Hey, that sounds great, Chris. You guys take care.
Miss us?
Come here, brother. Give me a hug. Bring it in for the real thing.
We're on call for you. Catch the podcast at HailVarsity.com, the ESPN Lincoln app, or download them on iTunes.
Saddle up, partner.
Back to Hail Varsity Radio.
One final time on a Wednesday, a reminder to get buckled up. Snow is on the ground, at least in Lincoln. And not really cool up north either. If you're headed north, if you're out west, get that seatbelt on. Why wait to buckle up? Seatbelts prevent excessive injury when your vehicle and your body need to slow down in a hurry. That applies to the driver's seat, passenger seat, or back seat. Buckle up now. Click it or ticket a message from the Nebraska Department of Highway Safety Office. Show's going to be slapped on the old podcast here. Shortly, HailVarsity.com is where you go for that, or iTunes, it's free, and take us with to the gym, or wherever you want to go with the old podcast. Pretty convenient to do so. Mike Babcock and Mike Shuhart, great in hour one. Brad Edwards laid out what goes into the FPI, his thoughts on Nebraska, and he is must listen to today. On the Nebraska hype, the FPI, the reaction he's gotten. And then Tony Quattrocchi, head coach at North Star. Great info on Donovan Williams when it comes to all those Power Fives chasing him. And, of course, where North Star stands in the playoff race for high school postseason. What a game last night against Millard North. Tough for North Star, but great effort. And then you had the Jock Doc tomorrow. Want to see you down at Longwell's. You got a family affair going on with Hoiberg, his son, and the Hoiberg family welcoming in their boy, who's been pretty integral on Michigan State as a walk-on, as a character kid, as a high-effort dude that's made that Sparty team better. The preseason number one that he's unranked. Nebraska has gotten fraternity paneled the last few times they have played Sparty. Does the 10-game losing streak continue, or does it come to a crashing halt? Sparty's been a team that can beat anybody on a given night. They can also step in it and lose. I don't know. Cam Mack, Cassius Winston, phenomenal matchup. That's just an individual thing, but nope, it's always special and pretty awesome when Sparty comes to Lincoln, and we'll see where things go. But we are down at Longwell's to hang out, to get you hydrated, to get you some food. We're not funding that, but no better place than Longwell's to come see us. as a Hail Varsity Roadshow Thursday tomorrow. Jeff Smith, longtime Husker coach, will join us. Andy Markowski, the pride of Ord, will have some thoughts. Brandon Vogel of Hail Varsity going to be with us as well. And we'll have some thoughts from Coach Hoiberg from his presser today. So, Brandon Vogel, once I want to send you back to HailVarsity.com specifically on the work Vogues has done with early point spreads for Nebraska and win percentages, and he's kind of expanded that out. We'll talk to him tomorrow more about the rest of the Big Ten. It's not just how's Nebraska going to do, how are the opponents looking, and you know, excited for football to get here. As we gear towards spring, we'll have some more thoughts on Husker baseball end of the week, and a lot riding on tomorrow night with Nebraska and Michigan State. So come see us, Longwell's Roadshow Thursday, 4 to 6, ahead of that 7:30 tip down in the rail yard. Come enjoy. For Elijah Herbal, Chris Schmidt, give us a find and follow on Twitter at @Schmidt_radio, at Herbal Essences, and we'll tip one back with you tomorrow at Longwell's with Hail Varsity Roadshow Thursday, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.